Gotta give the people a little shot of energy today, man. This is arguably one of the most hyping songs ever made.
Oh my God!
I hope you don't have a crook in your neck, cause you really about to bob your head on this one. You gotta make it. That's an ugly face in this song. Come on.
Microphone checker, swinging sword lecture, closing down the sector. Supreme neck protector, better want him, kid, Mr. Mepsa. Boiling pot, bout to blow his lid from the pressure. Too hot for TV, for sheezy. Too many wanna be hard, be easy. It's all in together, going all out together. It don't take much to please me. Still, homes are never satisfied like the stones. We don't condone fighting, see them selling crossbones.
Yeah.
Protecting what I'm writing, don't clash with the titan who blast with a license to kill rap recitants. Come on, in the zone with your nigga from the group home to Cal.
Fuck your lifestyle.
Put your lights out, get this shit to crackin', got you feeling with your pipes out. Time for some action. Surfing the avenue, mad at you, where I used to battle crews. Back when Antoinette had that attitude. Cover me, I'm going in, walls closing in. Got us busting off these pistols, my niggas got issues again. Same song, armed with the mega bomb. Blow you out the frame, then I'm gone.
Yo, I was going too, but we roam. Cellular phones, dot meth, back in the flesh, blood and bones, don't condone.
Yeah.
Spin bank loans and homegrown. Suckers break like turbo and ozone. When I grab the broom, moonwalk. Platoon hawk, my goons bark, leave you in the blue lagoon, lost. True. V9's in the glove with Masu, D9 in the glove, right behind.
Yes, 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 man. I had to get you just a nice little shot of red and meth, man. Love that song. So as always, let's just make sure we get this party started off right. Testing, testing, 1, 4, 3. Testing, testing, 1, 4, 3. It is all love. Baby, welcome to the Ken's Corner Podcast, and I am your host, Ken, and I'm so thankful for you to be here listening. You could have been doing anything else, but you chose to spend your Tuesday with me. So as always, you can find me on all my social media at Ken's Corner Podcast on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, and you can also find me on my website, www.kenscorner.co. That's www.kenscorner.co. Welcome to episode number 56. Now, wherever you're consuming your podcast entertainment, this is what I need you to do. I need you to subscribe. I need you to download. I need you to stream. I need you to retweet and share when we post. And please always tell four people about this episode. The song that I played is very apropos and for the moment, because this person that I'm bringing on, man, he brings the best out of me and vice versa. So with no further ado, I'd just like to welcome this good brother here. He's an entrepreneur. He's a husband. He's a father. He is just a man of God. He's a trainer. He's certified and he's trained in it. One of the brightest and most articulate brothers I know. Good brother Carlos Stewart. So welcome, good brother. How are you doing today?
I'm wonderful, man. As good as I can be, you know. Of course, with reference to everything that's going on. But I'm good, man. How you doing?
Can't complain at all, man. Just, you know, life and everything works perfect until it's time to go. Yeah, so.
Absolutely. I feel you there 100%.
Yeah, but it's nobody's fault. I mean, just, you know, we just have to continue to keep working through it to continue to make this podcast one of the best. And so just like I said in my introduction, man, it's always good to have people that you love that you can just sit and have a conversation with. So. As I was telling my audience, I mean, this brother here is a bright, he's an intellectual. He, you know, his story, I'm going to let him tell his own story, but it just shows the perseverance of just being able to make it through and navigate through this life. And so this is a conversation. He's going to make several appearances on my podcast because if we get going, this podcast could easily be 3 hours. Just knock down a couple topics here tonight, but just want to give Give our audience, you know, introduce yourself, you know, who are you and what makes you the man you are today. Now, I will make sure that I won't do anything to jeopardize your job. So that's the main thing.
I appreciate it.
I won't ask those type of questions. But just introduce, you know, just let the public know who you are.
Appreciate you, brother. And let me say this, too. It is very important that we acknowledge and show admiration for brothers like you. Ken, I mean, those who are listening know, if you've listened before, that this is one of the most powerful, insightful, passionate people on the planet. And I appreciate you using your platform. It helps a lot of people, man, from mental health to just really being able to hear a wonderful black man like yourself, you know, speaking that real truth. So the love is mutual, man. I'm honored to always call you friend and call you brother. But most certainly honored to be here on this podcast as well, Ken's Corner. So yeah, my name is Carlos Stewart, man. I'm just a 40-year-old man who was born and raised in Dayton, Ohio. To me, I think it's the greatest city on the planet. Other people kind of disagree a little bit, but you know, growing up wasn't always easy for me. You know, there was a lot of different things that I've had to experience that I don't think that, you know, people would ever choose, you know, to experience. But I say that every experience you have is a jewel. It's a pearl. It's because it allows you to grow and build from it. So I look at all experiences that way. So yeah, I was born in 79, grew up here in Dayton, you know, grew up in the 80s. You know, the crack epidemic hit hard mm-hmm. here in Dayton, just like it did everywhere else, but mm-hmm. it particularly hit hard in Dayton. You know, I don't know if you've heard about the Dayton Springfield area, mm-hmm. just that I-75, man, it was such an easy way to offload and to unload drugs and things like that. So it hit here very hard. And, you know, my family was not exempt. And based on that, I was kind of raised through turbulence. You know, having to kind of navigate on my own as a young man, trying to grow up without a dad, with a mom who was basically fighting that battle with drugs, you know, and addiction. And it was kind of me and my two younger brothers and my younger sister kind of fending for ourselves. And there was a lot of growing up that happened during that time. I grew up in a part of Dayton that was also very racist. We would routinely see the Klan in the 80s. This is in the 80s. This ain't the 60s and the 50s, right? Mm-hmm. This is in the 80s, you know, marching up and down the streets. You know, I watched my friends be beat by poles. I've been in many fights with folks who, you know, absolutely looked at me and saw, you know, a tyrant, saw the enemy, mm-hmm. you know. And growing up in that environment with my siblings, you know, it definitely hardens your heart, hardens your spirit, you know. So I had to deprogram a lot of that as I matriculated through academia, my social circles, you know, and honestly, most importantly for me, what was most crucial was trying to build my spiritual life and my identity, mm-hmm. right? Trying to figure out who I was as a young black man navigating those experiences. Trying to figure out who I was as a young child who was loved by God, even though I didn't know God, you know, I was loved by God, mm-hmm. you know, so all of that kind of came to a head, you know, when I got to high school, me figuring that stuff out, you know, met my wife in high school, you know, she was a huge part of me understanding who I was, understanding my faith journey, and, which ultimately led me to the man that I am today, you know, growing through that, going through some of those pains that I had to deal with, you know, and every day I'm still working, still chipping away at the iceberg, you know, but I'm close to figuring out who I am, you know, there's so much more that has to still come, you know, with experiences, with life grows to me, but it's been a labor of love, most certainly.
One of the things that I appreciate, and again, I appreciate you sharing that, one of the things I want to talk about is this past Friday. So I'm in therapy, and yeah. This past Friday I took a test as far as PTSD, and I scored like astronomical. So you always know when when your therapist got a lot of work, when they go, oh wow.
right. The eyebrows.
Right. Like, okay. He said, wow, you scored pretty high. And when we look at PTSD, and that's post-traumatic syndrome, it's one of those things that, you know, they talk about as far as the war, you know, when the soldiers came back from war. And I'm not going to sit here and say, you know, I didn't see killings and murders. I didn't see things like that. I've seen people get shot. Like, I've seen that, but I've never seen anybody actually get shot and killed in front of me. But one of the things that he helped me understand is the traumas that we do have.
Absolutely.
And so how that shapes us. And so I want to spend part of the conversation as far as how, you know, your traumas, which you feel comfortable in sharing, and then how you utilize those traumas and how it shaped you are today, and how do you utilize those as lessons? Because one of the things you are is a mentor. And so how do you transform those traumas into therapy for other people?
Brother, I appreciate that. I think that there are absolutely varying levels of post-traumatic stress disorder and or syndrome. And I think depending on who you talk to, they're going to tell you different stories, right? And I think that one thing we always have to honor is that everybody's story has validity, right? We don't trivialize anybody's experience. You know, I heard you say, you know, you haven't witnessed the you know, when people come back from war and the major killings and things like that, but it doesn't mean that the things you have experienced doesn't mean that they haven't shaken your spirit to the point where, you know, it was traumatic and you relive those environments. So they show up in other spaces, right? And don't allow you to function or affect your mental well-being for an elongated period of time. Mm-hmm. I think that's very important to acknowledge, you know, because sometimes we won't seek help and we won't, you know, seek counsel. And I appreciate you sharing again, seeing a counselor, because many of us won't do that because we think, oh, I've never really been through anything, or I haven't been with that person has been through. You know, I encourage anybody who's listening that if you need help, seek help. It doesn't matter, right? Mm-hmm. It shakes you, may not shake somebody else, but it shook you. And it's okay to seek help. For me, I know that. I personally think that everybody living is on a continuum of post-traumatic stress in some ways, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because we've all experienced things. And I think we as people, one of the things that we don't do well, I think, is sometimes acknowledge that pain.
Mm-hmm.
Right. One of the things that I know that I do on a regular basis is reflect upon the things that were painful to me, and honestly remind myself that I fought through it, but also remind myself that I'm still processing and it still affects me and it still shows up. I dealt with extreme depression growing up, mm-hmm. where it was so bad to the point where I gained about 100 pounds in 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
You know. And it weighed on me figuratively and literally, right? To the point where, you know, you didn't want to be around me. I didn't want to be around people. Like, you couldn't stand to be in the same room with me because I literally would steal your energy. Any positive energy you had, I'm robbing you of it because of the dark cloud that hung over me, that I allowed to hang over me, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it took a while for me to figure out what to do, how to do that. I heard a brother who came and did a workshop, and he gave me this. He told this story, and it really captured to me what I think us as mentors, us as people who give back in spite of our stress, in spite of our strife. Right? It really captured it perfectly. It was the story of a pearl. And how pearls are made, you know, there's a clam or an oyster, whatever, at the bottom of the ocean, minding its own business, doing what it needs to do. It gets a pebble or a speck of sand caught, right, in its mouth. And, you know, it doesn't want it to be there, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it fights it, right? The speck of the pebble is irritating the pearl, right? It's irritating the oyster, rather. It's making it angry. It's hurting it, right? So in an effort to push it away, it basically puts these secretions, right? These things on it. It fights it off. It's trying to just fight it off. It works at it all the time. And it's going through, you know, the struggle of fighting this pebble off. And what happens is, through all that friction and all that saliva, whatever it is that's on this, like the secretions, it wraps itself around that pebble or that sand, and it makes it into a pearl,
mm-hmm.
right? And what ends up happening is people find the oysters, they open up the oyster, and they find a pearl. And they give that pearl to someone else. It's beautiful, and people love the pearl, right?
Mm-hmm.
But that pearl was created, right, because of frustration and anger and hurt and pain,
mm-hmm.
you know? And in that oyster's effort to push that away, right, that journey of pushing that away, that journey of navigating that pain, it created something beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that we as people have to know that sometimes, you know, and this isn't for everyone, and sometimes this is also hard to hear, depending on who you talk to.
Mm-hmm.
What we go through is not for us,
mm-hmm.
right? It's because we need to give that to somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
I know you as a wonderful man and a passionate, loving father of four wonderful boys. You know, I would argue that some of the stuff that you had to go through, you know, you being that oyster, you created pearls for you to give to those boys,
mm-hmm.
you know? And I think that is kind of what I think it comes to. And every time I think about pain or frustration or even life right now, some of the hardest times that really could create post-traumatic stress,
mm-hmm.
you know, in our lives, you know, how awesome will that be when we are resilient and we persist through it? You know, what kind of pearls of wisdom are we now going to have
mm-hmm.
to pass on to people who might be going through something similar
right.
or might just need to hear a word or a positive story from somebody, you know? There's so many layers to that, but, you know, and again, I don't want to trivialize anybody's experience and say that it's not super difficult, but ultimately you have to take that from it, you know? It's so important to do that.
And I'm glad you said that, because that's one of the things that I struggle with, helping people understanding not to minimize your pain. I don't believe you should throw a pity party for your pain. And I think that's the fine line. But unfortunately, you know, not just in the African-American neighborhood or community, because I've experienced other people in other communities say the same thing, especially when it deals with men. It's just like, you got to suck that up. And
right. There's
a time and a place for that. But just like you said, even though it's post or past, you know, post-traumatic stress, yes, it's after the fact, but it's still a lingering pain, and we don't know what new trauma is going to unlock the past trauma and
absolutely.
How we navigate our relationships, because as family men, I would argue to say that some of our conflict within our family was based upon something that happened in the past that we didn't even know that was deep down inside of us. And
absolutely.
Something that our partner did to unlock that, then next thing you know, we're lashing out. And so I love the fact that, you know, you're letting the audience know not to trivialize your pain. And I think that's the part that, you know, we as men, you know, as we OGs and elders now in the game, it's just the fact that, you know, I do my best to lessen the trauma that my children have. So, you know, like I tell them all the time, I know y'all gonna write a book about me. I'm just trying to make sure the bad chapter's not too long.
Right. Let me influence this chapter. Right.
One of the things I've had the privilege, and going back to that oyster story, I remember when you first told me that in a training, and that's something I never forgot. So I'm thankful that you brought that back up. One of the things, still within the same vein, but just transition a little bit, when it comes to identity as an African-American male, we're both educated men. However, we had two different paths when it comes to our collegiate experience and how
we
navigate both of those ethos on our various campus. What did that do for you at a PWI or predominantly white institution as far as identity coming from your post-traumatic stress and now navigating the halls of academia on PWI?
So one of the things that I was blessed to be able to do was go to a predominantly white institution, right, in which I may, as a black man, may have felt extremely marginalized if I hadn't chosen the school that I chose. I went to Wilmington College, which is right around the corner from Zing, Ohio. But I went there with probably six of my very best friends. Mm-hmm. They were already there, right? These are guys that I played football with in high school. There was also a bunch of guys from the city of Dayton who were rival football players that actually went to that school as well, right? Mm-hmm. So we literally went on that campus, I would argue, probably 40 or 50 deep, you mm-hmm. know, of all of us who knew each other. It was a blessing. Not everyone has that privilege to be able to do that, right? It helped me matriculate through that experience a little bit easier. I went to Sinclair Community College for a year and transferred into Wilmington. So a lot of my growth in my identity development and developing self-efficacy happened at Sinclair Community College, which was, you know, again, a blessing to be able to do as well, one of the premier schools. I wouldn't trade that experience for anything to be able to start there and then transfer. But getting there, even figuring out kind of who I am, where I fit, I went there and my identity, honestly, when I left Dayton was that I was a football player. You know, I played ball. That's mm-hmm. who I was. That's who I was known as. I was first team all city, you know, kind of a big deal, right? Mm-hmm. And as far as that goes. Mm-hmm. And going to Wilmington to play ball, I ended up not even playing football, right? I was on a team for a while, and I ended up quitting the team. And there was a crisis in my spirit, right? I no longer had that aspect of my identity, but all my boys still did. They were all playing. So I'm like, okay, you know, for one, it took a whole lot. For one, it was extremely courageous of me to do. But on the other part, I kind of felt very cowardice at the same time, a lot of cowardice. So mm-hmm. at that time, that was one of my lowest points in my, I would say, you know, I guess adult life, you know. My mom was still struggling with addiction at that time. So I went into college with a lot of mental instability. And, you know, football, I decided to quit because I was also dealing with some medical stuff that I didn't even know about. And I just don't think that God had it in my plan at that time for me to play. I think he was trying to get me to release that crutch, to mm-hmm. release that aspect of my identity so that I could do something else, to make room for something else.
Mm-hmm.
So something was in my spirit. You're an athlete as well. You know that, bro, I went through all two-a-days. I went through two-a-days and in some ways three-a-days.
Mm-hmm.
Got all the way until we were done with two-a-days. So I did all of the training. All of the hard part was over. I got my jersey, everything. So I was done. I was like, yeah, we good. I'm even in the photo day. So if I was going to quit, I should have quit early, right? Mm-hmm. I went through all of that, and something was in my spirit and said, this ain't going to work. Went in the coach's office by myself and said, I'm done, right? And I say all that to say, part of you really trying to figure out who you are,
mm-hmm.
One of the most important aspects of figuring out who you are is realizing what you're willing to leave behind when you transition out of, right? When I started playing ball, I needed it to get rid of the anger and the frustration and the pain that I had
mm-hmm.
that was still in my spirit. By the time, even though I was still struggling a little bit, I think that I was done. I was done with a lot of that in my life, and I definitely felt different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my outlook on life was different. God showed up in my life differently. You know, so when I went and tried to play football, it wasn't the same. You know, because I needed it. I didn't need it the same way. And he needed to make room for something else. I ended up becoming a student leader, you know, was known on campus that way. I became an RA and was known on campus that way. And I really don't think I could have done all of that if I was playing ball, you know. So it was about that. So that one aspect of it is very, very important. I think the other side is we have to be extremely mindful of how we show up in the world as men, as black men, and then as people, right? So getting there, trying to figure out, you know, who I need to be at this institution, navigating this predominantly white institution where the number one major is agriculture, but there's only 400 people on campus, you know, very different than what I'm used to. For those 400 people almost, you know, that was a freshman, I mean, that was my junior and senior year, you know, in high school, you know, so going there and experiencing that, I had to really figure out where I fit and how I fit in. And I think it was important for me to really do some soul searching and developing who I was, you know, choosing the correct major, plugging into the right people, really embracing my friends and them being able to hold me accountable, me also holding them accountable to say, you know, we're going to graduate. You know, we're going to do this and we're going to figure this out, because if one of us go home, it's going to disrupt the experience of the next person. Mm-hmm. So we all going to do this. You know, even if it takes some of us longer, we're going to do this. Right? And we did it. You know, so I think that there's, you know, I'm still doing that to this day, still trying to put that puzzle piece together as well. Now, I do think that there's some other layers there as far as being black men, and I got a whole philosophy on kind of some of the struggles that we deal with as men when it comes to why we are the way we are sometimes and this tough persona that we put on and, mm-hmm. you know, the dismantling of the black man, you know, the society has done, you know, and it's really kind of, it's terrible when you really think about it. And, you know, and that's a whole lot, you know, I kind of get into that for hours, but I'll leave it there.
And I can sentiment, it's funny how people's lives can mirror. And as a proud graduate of HBCU, it was a badge of honor just to be able to walk a campus and see the power structure look like you.
Absolutely.
For me, the post-traumatic stress disorder was a thing of not having the consistent male role model in my father pushing me to whatever greatness I could have had athletically or just period as a man, or affirming me. Let me put it more that way. Affirming me as a man. And yeah. So for me, the same thing, the difference was I quit the day of the football meeting and mm-hmm. I walked in and, you know, immediately became intimidated because those were some grown ass men when I walked into that room. And I never forget, and rest his soul, you know, I had the pleasure of coaching up under him, Coach Mo. I never forget, he's like, "Yo, big fella, where you going?" And I was like, you know, I made some excuse. Like, I got to go do something and then go back. And thankful for my position coach who stayed on me. And when I went back out for the team, you know, the team got taken away. But for me, it was the easiness of giving up because I didn't see that type of consistent, persistent, or wasn't really pushed. My mom did the best she could. Yeah, she liked sports, but she wasn't into it, you know, all like that. And so I'm not, you know, again, at the end of the day, it still comes down to, I still made the choice. It comes down to my decisions and my choices. So I'm not going to heap a whole bunch on my father, but that stress of not having that consistent role model, or having my coaches told me about my father and my uncle. He didn't. You know, they told me like, "Oh, they said my last name, hold on, is you know, such and such your dad?" And I'm like, "Yeah." That's like, "Oh, snap." And you know, then, you know, as a, back then, the coach, "You ain't nothing like your dad." You know, they was trying, that was their way of encouragement at the time. Yeah. But for me, finding myself as a man on that campus, you know, again, I was a student leader with no title. You know, the only title I ever held for real was, I was the president of my freshman hall. But I didn't really want to do anything else, but I was, you know, still a leader on campus. And so seeing that mirror, it still was the identity because, you know, I am from Cleveland. I am from the city. But people that wasn't from the city, they claim, you know, as far as especially the men, "Yeah, I'm from Cleveland." I'm like, "Oh, okay, what street you stay on?" And then they start saying they from Bedford or Twinsburg. Or I'm like, "Wait a minute, that ain't Cleveland. That's the suburbs. Right. That's a whole nother city." But they wanted to relate to the toughness of that city. In the same way with Chicago, people was, you know, from Chicago, some of them wasn't really from the city of Chicago, or really wasn't from the city of Detroit, or really was, you know, whatever major urban metropolitan city, they, some of them wasn't from there, but the persona of coming from Chicago is like, oh snap, you know. But nah, you from Evansville, like, you're not not from Chicago, you from some other place. And so those type of things still mirrored, you know, it, even on HBCU campuses. And now what I do is, as far as a mentor, is telling students just to be comfortable with who they are. Because absolutely, who you are, is that's your best quality. That is, can't nobody do. So if you're from Twinsburg, be proud you're from Twinsburg. If you're from,
yeah,
if you're from, you know, what's the suburb of Dayton? Is it, was it Oak or Oak?
Oakwood.
Oakwood. Yeah, you know, Oakwood. Like, you know, I'm from Dayton. Where are you staying? And you're like, wait a minute, that's Oakwood. That ain't even the city.
And when you know that it's segregated the way that it is, mm-hmm, you know, and there's some people who say it because they really do love their city, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, some people being from Cleveland saying, I'm from wherever, you know, and you know good well. But when you're saying it to basically try to say that I'm just, like, I'm tough, I don't really, mm-hmm, that's the false and the phoniness of
right.
it. That is when you call them on it and you say, wait a minute. But if you are like, yo, I'm from here, but I claim Chicago. I love the city. I love the arts. I love the history. I love the mm-hmm. fact that, you know, these celebrities from here. So, yeah, you know, I'm proud of Cleveland. But don't you know, use it as a crutch when you want to seem like you're a tough guy. Like, then that's when, again, people get caught on it, mm-hmm, and it gets bothersome to them. But, mm-hmm, yeah, I feel you on that.
Well, I'm going to take a couple seconds. I'm going to give you a chance to get us a little sip of water because I got to pay the bill. So,
Yes, sir.
I'm going to go ahead and talk about one of my sponsors, and that is Stitcher, man. So the Stitcher app is one of the many places where you can consume podcast entertainment. So just like the Ken's Corners podcast, Joe Rogan Experience, Joe, like I said, I say it every week, Joe Rogan is one of my favorite podcasters out there, and other fantastic apps. So if you use, we're still running our promo code, our promo, and you can get one free month of Stitcher. You enter the promo code KEN, capital K, capital E, capital N, and then you can get 1 month free. And then after that, there's two ways you can pay, either in a monthly $4.99 a month or annually $34.99 a month. So again, if you like comedy, anything, so go to stitcher.com/premium and sign up today and use the promo code KEN, capital K, capital E, capital N, and get your 1 month free. Man, I feel so good every time I say that, man. I feel good every time
sounds
I say
good.
That.
Take advantage of it.
Right.
It's wonderful. It's a great opportunity. They offer.
All right. So we talked about identity. We talked about that. I still want to stay in this vein because I think that this is, and I always like, I let God lead my discussions, especially, you know, people who I, just you have a vast array of knowledge. So like I said, you'll be back and we're gonna talk other subjects. But staying in this vein, when it comes to the post-traumatic stress disorder and communication as a black man, as one, in the professional setting, and then two, which I believe is the most important, the family setting. Yeah. Talk to me how that shaped your communication styles, some pitfalls that you may have had, and then also some strengths that, you know, you got from that.
Absolutely. I think knowing who I am and you know, so I'm a big guy, mm-hmm, on top of being a black man. And I think that, you know, folks can relate. And if you don't, sometimes if you're not a black man, you can't necessarily relate. You still there, brother?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, I'm sorry about that. Uh-huh. I heard something going on in my ear. Uh-huh. When you show up in spaces, you know, presenting the way that we present at times,
mm-hmm,
sometimes people are automatically on guard, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think that it gets in your professional setting, you know, most certainly, and even just to be real with you, you know, with family, you know, you often also have to be careful how you discipline, right?
Mm-hmm.
How you how your voice carries, you know, the way that you argue. Arguing is a natural and it is a I would say a very healthy part of life and part of relationships.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but, you know, when you are a lot more animated and flamboyant in the way that you express yourself, it can be absolutely, it can come off as threatening.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that is where it gets difficult, because I'm going to tell you, I don't know about you, but I'm automatically on the defense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when somebody, you know, throws it back on me and I'm being too aggressive, I'm like, yo, I'm just expressing myself. This is who I am. You know, but I also have to, unfortunately, I have to check myself in understanding how people, and nobody's exempt, have been socialized around black men and black energy, the black energy that men give off, the energy that black men give off,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
We're automatically a threat. We know that there are black men who die every day, you know, at the hands of people who are supposed to be protecting them, because they're automatically a threat. You know, just on the onset of an encounter, they're a threat because of who they are and how they look. And whatever archetype they have been told, this is what this person, you know, does. This is what this large 6'2", you know, 250-pound black man, this is what he has, this is what he's capable of. You know, when he may not hurt a fly, right? Everybody is indoctrinated with that. And it's frustrating to me, because I think that sometimes, you know, we are burdened. We're automatically burdened. But sometimes we give into that, you know, and sometimes we don't have the luxury of being able to just be, you know, to just express ourselves, to, you know, to be angry. Mm-hmm. You know, I find myself being that guy even in my professional setting that most people are comfortable around, because I work extremely hard at it, right? Because I'm trying to defeat, you know, and dispel the myth, when really I... You know, part of my journey is that, you know, I am who I am, you know. But at the same time, you know, it's my job to make you feel comfortable with who I am around you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now, unfortunately, if I don't choose to do that, then I may get pulled into HR. You know what I'm saying? Because I have a disagreement with somebody at the meeting and they don't like the way that I disagree.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Or even in public, right? Everyone should be able to discipline their child, you know, especially with words. I even have to be careful how I speak to my child in public based on how people might receive that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's unfortunate that we have to do that, but that is the reality, you know, and I'm only speaking for black men. You know, I know that other, you know, definitely black women have a completely different, you know, journey when it comes to that, you know, that may be just as frustrating for black women. And I know that to be true, right? You know, but I think that that's the game that we constantly have to play, you know, and sometimes we choose to say, I'm going to play the game and I'm going to do this. And it may work for me. It may not work for me. You know, it may work for me in this setting, you know, with these people who don't look like me. But I'm losing credibility with people who do look like me. And both relationships are important. You know what I'm saying? And I think that we have to figure out which one at that point is most important. You know, and I think that that is what we as some black men constantly do. I think that when you compound that with the fact that, you know, we're triggered because of the post-traumatic stress that we deal with at times. When someone says something to me, you know, in a meeting, you know, because one thing that I know that I see on a regular basis in academia is, you know, you and I both spent a decent amount of time in the streets, right? We know what it is when it comes down to we need to put these hands up and get going, right? but what's almost worse is in academia, there's these mental and psychological and emotional bullies. That try to sit in spaces and prove to you that they're smarter than you, you know, with slick comments and certain things, right? And you're like, okay, I don't want to play this game with you, because ultimately, you know, that's not where I come from. You know, we can get down if we need to get down, you know, but ultimately, so sometimes we sit and take it. you know, but other times we get triggered to the point where it's like, okay, you know, I'm getting ready to lash out, and it's not going to feel good to you at all, you know. But when it comes to the psychological, again, and emotional bullying and triggers that someone tries to present to you, you know, you don't really get that same, you know, it's not handled the same way. And I think that sometimes that has to be acknowledged. And I think that we have to play that game constantly, not to mention trying to figure out how we show up at work physically, professionally, whether we need to be groomed a certain way, mm-hmm. you know, whether we have, you know, the way we wear our clothes and things like that. We don't look like the president of the university who walks around, you know, or the vice president or the person in the professors. You know, we look different,
mm-hmm.
Potentially, the way that we dress, because we were socialized differently, you know. And I think that sometimes all of those different layers factor in to, you know, I would honestly say that stress, you know, the frustration, and in many ways adding to the post-traumatic stress of having to navigate, you know, as a black man.
And that's one of the things that I struggle with later in my life. I don't think I'm struggling with it as much, but I still struggle because, I don't know. Have you watched the series Black as Fuck yet on Netflix?
I've watched one episode. I got to get through it. Okay. People are criticizing it, but I'm going to give it a chance.
Yeah, I love it. And one of the things he's going to talk about is that very piece. Oh, I mean, he throughout the whole thing, but when it comes down to, not too much of a spoiler, but it's talk about how do we talk about amongst each other, how do we critique our art, our music, you know, our entertainment, and within his genre as far as writing and movies. And one of the things he said, you know, I just want to be able to make a bad, like as black people, I just want the opportunity to make a bad movie. And it be critiqued because it's a bad movie, not because you're scared to say something to me because I'm black. And us being had those conversations. And so for me, you're right. It is those intellectual joustings that you sometimes have to navigate through. But just like you said, and I don't, now I want to let my listeners know, I'm not a tough guy and I don't recommend that you do the things that I do. However, honestly, bro, I still walk in like, I'll still whoop your ass. At the end of the day, I will whoop your ass. Like, not only am I smarter than you, but I come from a place where you responsible for what you say. You responsible for what you say. You responsible for your tone. You responsible for all of that. Don't think that because you doctor such and such, you can just talk to me any old kind of way, or because you my supervisor, you can talk to me on the kind of way. And as a father of four boys, I had to catch myself to be very transparent, not to emasculate my sons because, well, you can't look this way or you can't do this because you're black. I'm like, wait a minute. I'm not teaching you to be a man. Like, I'm teaching you at an early age to be subservient instead of being proud. I unfortunately, as a father of black of boys, I have to say that you will not be treated fairly. You will be judged different. And one of the things I had to learn is, you know, like I tell them, always count the costs. Now, if you're willing to stand by your word or stand by what you say, make sure you're in the right. But if it doesn't work out for you, you got to be able to take those consequences. And that's something that, you know, I still learn to this day. You know, I have a pair. I frequent this black-owned shoe shop, and they have these Nat Turners. And so
they look
like Air Max. They red, black, and green with Nat Turner on the back of the shoe. The shoe was sweet. And my son looked at him. He's like, "My dad, them shoes are sweet. Can I get a pair?" I said, "You got to look up who Nat Turner is first." And it was just watching people watch me walk. But it's with pride. It's not to intimidate. It wasn't to anything. But just like you said, sometimes as a black man, you just get tired of always having to be uncomfortable with wanting to be comfortable.
Absolutely.
I have a big heart. I love people. I you know, people say I got a nice smile, but I get mad just like everybody else. And so when I get angry, you know, unfortunately, it's been sensationalized. If I get angry in public, guns get drawn on me, you know. Right. But you get angry and you can run up on a state house with guns and nobody does nothing to you. And that's
or people calling you. You know what I'm saying? You just think people wanna go hug you and ask you what's wrong. And, you know, I get angry and they calling the police.
Right.
You're absolutely right, brother. Yep.
One of the things, because we're running a little, again, our time, because I like to keep the podcast under a certain time, but like I said, you're going to be back. One of the things I want to end with, because I always like to end with hope, words of wisdom, and I like the fact that you talked about the pearl. So if you can give out some pearls, some jewels, as you know, to our listeners, some encouragement, I'll just give this time and this space for you just to go ahead and just give some of that wisdom, some of that love.
Absolutely, brother. I appreciate you, man. I will say, first and foremost, I truly believe that you have to know that your brain, your spirit, your heart, your soul is stronger than anything that you will ever experience. I think that no matter what is thrown at you in this life, you have got to know that you are stronger than that thing. You are more powerful than that thing. I don't know what you ascribe to. I truly believe that we're all children of God, and God breathes that fantastic, wonderful, powerful air into us and gave us his grace. And once that happens, and once you truly know that you are loved and that God is overjoyed that you are walking this earth, and that's what you might have to work at. You might have to work at knowing that, truly believing that. There is nothing that you can't handle and nothing that you can't do. I think that you have got to understand and know that. There's nothing that you can't conquer. So that may mean working on that muscle, working on your brain, right? Working on your spirit, working on your you know, so that you have the tools to be able to tackle anything. And however that looks is up to you, you know. I think that people have got to know that. But you are. You're stronger. You have to believe that you're stronger, you know. And I think that we don't give ourselves enough credit when it comes to that. I think that we also have to remember that us as black people, I'm going to say this, not everybody feels the same way, right? But I definitely think that black people in this country, and I know people are listening from everywhere, but I'm a proud black man, I'm a proud African-American man. I think what makes me feel a little bit closer connected to that term African-American is that I feel like the uniqueness of people in this country who are descendants of American chattel slavery are some of the most unique people on this planet. If you look at our story and how we came about and who we are, in spite of the worst atrocity to me that man has ever inflicted on another man, right, was slavery, was American slavery. If you take people, you enslave them, you free them, and then you say, oh, wait a minute, you really weren't free. Let me tell you that you're really free years later, and then we basically release you and give you nothing, you know, but you have all the skills, right? And then, you know, we put laws in place to basically recapture you and re-enslave you, and then we, throughout the years, we set up systems to systemically oppress you and disenfranchise you, you know, but yet you still fight. You still create things like Black Wall Street, you know, and we know what happened there, but it was created, right? You know, you still have entrepreneurs that are birthed out of that pain. You still have people who stood up and fought. We still have some of the best literary minds, the best artists, the best medical, the best doctors, the best lawyers, right? Look at what we created. Look at how we created hip-hop. You know, look at how that was birthed.
Mm-hmm.
And that, it to me, might be one of the most important institutions in the world today.
Mm-hmm.
Easily the most most influential.
Mm-hmm.
Easily the most influential in the world today. You can't go to one corner on this planet and not find hip hop.
Mm-hmm.
And how it shows up in other music or shows up in the way people dress. You go to any boardroom in America and some semblance of hip hop is there. Even in how people wear their suits now or something like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
We are descendants of those individuals. You can't tell me we're not the most powerful people on this planet,
mm-hmm.
right? And I feel like we have to own that. You know, our spirit is ripe for success.
Mm-hmm.
Our spirit is ripe for resilience and persistence because our ancestors have already shown us that. Right, and I'm only speaking for you know, those in America. And I know we go back toward Africa. There's a whole different level mm-hmm. and layers there that we can capture. You know, when it comes to the warriors and the kings and the queens, and there's just so many different layers there. So I will say that whoever you are, get in touch, tap into that thing, right? That you know is going to be the fuel. That allows you to continue to burn through all of your pain, burn through all of those negative feelings that you may have, to help you to continue to successfully navigate that stress, that post-traumatic stress,
mm-hmm.
you know? And the last thing I'll say is be very careful and be very intentional mm-hmm. about who you choose to mate, who you choose to walk this life journey with. You know, is this somebody who is willing and ready and able to build a kingdom with, to build an empire with, you know? Even if it's not your intimate mate, maybe it's your friend. Are these friends, are these people around you who speak life into you rather than take life away from you? I think that's very, very important to keep in mind. But yeah, I think those are some nuggets, man. That's what I have.
I truly appreciate it. Now, is there any way, I don't know if you got any social media that you want to shout out or people get in contact with you?
Yes,
like
sir.
You always told me that I'm a resource, but I'm telling people now this is a resource and one of the brightest minds that I know, period. So if you have any social media or anything, I'll give you an opportunity to shout that out right now.
Appreciate you, brother. You can check me out on Facebook, actually, Carlos Torre Stewart. That's Carlos, and then my middle name is Torae, and then Stewart. I do a lot there. Many of my, it's a caution that it's a lot of greater material, Las Vegas greater material on my page, so you're going to have to deal with that. Also, if you want to check me out on Instagram, you know, you can check me out. You can put in Carlos Stewart, but you can also check in Los Dog the Great, LosDogDaGreat. And that's pretty much it. You can check me out on LinkedIn, Carlos Stewart. Look me up that way. You'll definitely find me. I do a lot through LinkedIn with my profession, and I work at the University of Dayton, so a lot with fundraising I do for underrepresented populations, diversity trainings, student development work, anything you can do. I'm also a certified mental health first aid trainer. I'm certified in sexual violence prevention. Presentations and things like that. Let me know. I'm available, man. And honestly, if anybody on the rail, just you look me up through any of the social medias and you just want to DM me, you just want to talk, I'm always available on the rail.
And he means that, ladies and gentlemen. I really want you to know that he really means that. He is easily one of the most genuine people. Well, I only hang around genuine people, but one of the most pleasant people that I know. So I just truly appreciate that. When you can't help to be great when you surround yourself with greatness. And I'm a sum product of the people that I hang around and that I allow the influence in my life. So Carlos and his family has been a great inspiration, motivation, and help mold. Still, and to this day, still help molding me into the man that I am today. And so with that, I just really want to say thank you. And I want to thank you to all the listeners out there. The nuggets and the jewels that Carlos dropped, man, those things are for anybody. And
yeah,
we speak from our experience, but I really like the fact that he took that sand in his life and made it to a pearl. So you can also do it. So as always, I'd like to thank everybody for listening. Thank you for just taking your time out for me. Please make sure that you continue to locate me and find me on all my social and connect with me on my social media, which is Ken's Corner at Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And you can also find me on my website, which is www.kenscorner.co. That is www.kenscorner.co. So everybody, please stay safe. Please make sure that you're doing what you need to do to make yourself stronger mentally, physically, emotionally, and spiritually.
Yes, sir.
Wash your hands, 6 feet, whatever you want to do to keep yourself safe, do that. And as always, I like to say I love, I trust, and I respect you. This is Ken of Ken's Corner Podcast. Peace out.